This is the 10th of August, 1980, Taos, New Mexico, and we're having a session with Bartholomew. Good morning.
Good morning. And I'd like to say I'm very pleased to see all of you, dear ones. My great pleasure to be among you again.
We would like to begin with a question about the function of Vista Grande and the Bartholomew movement.
I asked that this question be brought forward because as a result of the gentleman and woman's trip, one thing is very clear. There are many things awash on the earth plane, and the question has to be asked, why bother with one more thing? Because there are so many things going on. So I would like to clarify at once what we stand for and what we do not. The first thing we do not stand for is a group, a movement, an organization, any of these things. These things are not what we stand for. And the reason I say this with such assurance is that when you come to the realization that you need to find out who you are, there is one thing you will know at once, and that is that it is a one-man job. You must go alone. You cannot go in a group to the gates of heaven and knock and say, there are 25 of us here, may we enter. You have to go to your own awareness alone. Therefore, if you have an organization, that organization is going to, however subtly, bind you by its very cords of what it believes. And it will come to the moment, if you are truly trying to clarify your inner self, you will come to the moment where you see their belief structure and your inner self will not be able to accept it because inner self sees no structure at all. And you will then be in a clashing position with this thing that you have given your life to. And it is at that moment that you step back and say, I will go along with my organization, or I will break free. And in breaking free, that means leaving it all behind, saying goodbye, going out. All right. I see the people who understand what I say are people who have for lifetimes and lifetimes gone through organizations, ashrams, monasteries, whatever they call. Lifetimes have been spent doing that. And I say, please, let us not do it again. Those of you who feel drawn to those things, please go. They're wonderful. They're very supportive. They have within them a structure you can rely on and depend on. I am very unsure that they will give you freedom, but they will give you a sense of security. There is no security to be found in what we are doing. And if you are finding security, then you are not looking at what we're doing correctly. Because I say this with all the boldness that I can say. If you are really looking, you are alone. Because it is only in the loneliness of looking at your own thoughts, looking at your own beliefs, and abandoning them one by one, not through any tricks or magic, but just by seeing them, letting them go through your fingers, it is only through that that you can come to the clarity where nothing exists within you, where all thought is finally quieted, and then the seer of the all appears. And you cannot do this in groups. You cannot do this through beliefs. You cannot do this through organization. And the minute you have an organization, you will have fear. My friends, no matter what you say to me, I will say, I do not believe you can have an organization without fear. Why? Because if you have one, you believe in it. You've given your all to it. And then somebody moves in next door. And they have a different organization. Now, within you, the ego arises and says, this is a threat. This is a threat. If they have more people over there than they have here, oh, there's something wrong with us. They are right. We must be wrong. Do you understand? Fear comes in. And that is one of the greatest detriments to clarity is when fear moves in and you begin to defend. There is nothing to defend about what I say. Nothing. Because I have said nothing. I have said nothing. There is nothing to say. Truth is not a sayable commodity. You either know it or you do not know it. So we stand for nothing. Absolutely nothing. And this is why we can encompass everyone because we stand for nothing. And understanding that, then let us work together, let us live together, let us share together, but let us never make any kind of stipulation of we believe in. We believe in nothing. We believe in nothing. But we pray with all of our being that we will experience all. That is what we stand for, and nothing less than that. You put any structure here at all, any kind of obligation, any kind of belief, and we've missed. Because there is no such thing. In the vast oneness, there is nothing like that. There's just the emptiness of the seeing. And that is what we stand for. So if someone comes and says, what is your belief? You say, nothing. We have none. And they say, but you must have one. We say, no, we have none. Truly none. Which means we can embrace them all. On an altar, we can have the Buddha and the Christ and Ramana Maharshi and Ramakrishna and St. Francis. We can have them all because we exclude none, because we believe in none. We believe in all. You have to make a choice. You either believe in something or you believe in all. And if you believe in all, you can exclude nothing. No one, no thing. All sounds are mantra. All beings are Buddha, and this you must stand on. And that is the kind of quest that I'm asking for. We have traveled many miles, and we have seen many things. And the one thing that I know is there is much confusion, because people are confused with the process of what is happening. And they're forgetting the seer of the process. And all I ask is please, please become the seer. See. Do not try and change. Do not try to become different. Do not stand on your head. Do not spend thousands of dollars on therapy. See. Just that. Nothing more. And in the watchful seeing, every moment of your day, will come the clarity. When you look within, what will you see? You will see thoughts. If you're looking carefully, that is what you'll see. A jumble of thoughts and emotions, churning, churning, ever churning. You look outward and what do you see? You see separated entity. And if you just stay quietly as the watcher of all of that, never moving from your stance as watcher, you will see the seer. And then you will know what I mean. But you cannot find the seer with all this jumble. With all of the jumble and the rubble of lifetimes of beliefs. You cannot see it. So what is the job? What, then, is the job? Simple. To sit so quietly in the still pool that you observe all of the rocks, all of the moss, all of the trees, all of the mountains, all of the sky, just watch it all. By that I mean watch your thoughts, watch your emotions, watch your opinions, watch your beliefs. If you sit there having heavy thoughts and beautiful thoughts of God, I don't care, that's a thought. I see no difference, if we're talking about freedom, between thinking of the great gods and thinking about what you're going to have for dinner. I see no difference. We are still in the realm of thought. And it is not there that you will find. It is not there. So, I say to you, be grateful that it does not take an organization. Be grateful that it only takes one thing, because that one thing you have, which is you, and that it is all it's ever taken and all it ever will take. You can belong to groups until you die, but you will not be free until you know that you are alone. By that I mean you are literally asked to sit, to move, all day and all night in your own being of you, and watch. That is all. The rest is gossamer. The rest is candy for children to keep them interested long enough. I'm not against anything at all. I'm simply telling you what I have come to present. And that is all. For those who find this too steep, too austere, too boring, I say, I understand. Go your way, find a group, join it, believe in it, give your all to it, and learn all you can from it. But whatever happens, there comes one day when you must stand and say, There is just my being. That's all I know. That is all that you really know, is that you are. Everything else is utterly changeable. How can you count on anything else? You tell me you're the body. If I cut off your legs and your arms and part of your torso, you still say to me, I am. You will still say that. To someone whose mind is half gone, they do not say, I'm only half here. They say, I am. And you are. And that is what we are talking about. It is that I am-ness, that continuing, never leaving I am-ness. And that is what I'm talking about. So, what do we discuss when we speak of Vista Grande? What do we speak of when we talk about ascent to freedom? We speak about this. For people who want to come and observe the external world, who want to do a great deal of talking, who want to have a great deal of external relationship, then this is not the place for them. Not because they are not loved and welcome, but because that is not what it's all about. What this place is all about is the lonely walk within your own being to your own self. So, I say this so that those in the world who are hearing this tape will not be misled by thinking that when they come here, that they are going to see a bunch of people running around, taking care of them, showing them this, taking them there, to the art galleries, this and that. That is all available for whoever wishes. But when we speak of what we stand for, what we are here for, we are here as nothing. 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 That is all that we have to offer, which is a space to look at nothing. And that is all. Anything else is simply confusion, is more of your senses, is more of your mind. We are not here to validate that. We are here to calm things as best we can, so that in the clarity of the calmness, what can arise is the beauty of who you really are. There is no such thing as an organization. There is no such thing as a Bartholomew group. There is no such thing, because there is only no thing. And if you follow this, it isn't even a path. It is nothing. And yet it is all. And that is what I'm calling you to. If that is too austere, then so be it. But I sense for many that lifetimes and lifetimes have been spent entrapped in very beautiful, uplifting organizations that have trapped you at the last moment because the choice had to be made. Can I let go all of that? Can I say, I will kill the Buddha? Can I say that and do it? So let us not pretend what we are about. Let us be very clear. And let us let everyone know so they will not come here and be misled, so we will not disappoint. We are not a social organization. We work hard, and that is good. Physical work is a wonderful way of moving out of the intellect. So many things can be dropped by simple work. And I feel deep gratitude to so many people who we touched upon our trip. So many people. And so many of them I would love to come and visit. But we must state what we are and what we have to offer. And then let them choose. There's nothing very glorious or glamorous about coming here. It is hard. The work is hard. And the austerity of lonely walking toward emptiness it's all so hard. But that is what it is all about. And every man, every woman has his and her way of that walk within. And we honor them all. All. We make no judgment. We do not compare. We simply support whatever it is that they are, whatever way they feel is right for them. And we make no judgments. But we go about our own business. And this is what I think is most vitally important. So that we do not draw to this land people who would be confused about what we stand for. We will not have many group activities and dancing and parties and so forth. This is not what we are here for. I am not saying we cannot have these things. But that is not what it is here for. And those of you that are drawn, and those of you that sit here today, ask yourself deeply, is this the austere path that I really want? Or is there something else that is more comfortable, more acceptable for my present state? Because it is the gateless gate and the pathless path. And the journey that never needs to be taken because it's already here. That which you seek is already here. It is the seeker that you are seeking. It is that which in you is seeking that you are seeking. That is what you're looking for. The thing that is looking for is what you're looking for. Nothing more. And every thought and every object is simply a cloud against the sky. And it is the sky that you seek. And that is all. So all thought, all judgment, all belief, no matter how beautiful, is a cloud. I don't care if the clouds are gray or the clouds shine with light. They are still clouds. And you cannot see the sun. And you cannot see the sky. So those who hear, those who understand what I am saying, those who feel called to this kind of rigor, then I ask those to travel with us. I don't mean they all have to flock to this mountain. The mountain is within. The mountain is within. But let us not fall into any misconceptions. And let us never pretend to be something we are not. It has been our great joy to learn that perhaps, if luck is with us, that the Vedanta Society will be placing a retreat in this area. It is also our joy to learn that perhaps a Zen Roshi will be coming. The wonder of this is beautiful for all of us, because it means that there will be within this small little place a wonderful range of choice for each of you to take your own way, your own inner way. Don't you see that there is no conflict? There can never be conflict. There can only be embracing again and yet again another. And if within you arises a fear that someone might move next door with an organization that is more powerful, then know that you have misunderstood what I am all about. Because I am about nothing. No thing. So there's nothing to talk about when you speak about Bartholomew. There's nothing to say. There's only silence. Thank you. and observation and the seeking of the seeker. I felt it necessary to say this. So.
I'm reminded of the Roshi who was asked what the purpose of Zen was, and he said, there is no purpose.
Precisely. There's no purpose because there's no thing. How can you have purpose? Purpose means there's something to achieve. Purpose means you have to gather things up and start working towards something. Purpose means there is a goal. There is no goal. There's only being. And the only way to see being is in silence. So how best to go about it? All right. You are busy, all of you, busy. I've given many tools, and I would like to present another one, which I feel might be helpful. Which is this. If you can begin to see, only see, just look, without thought, then the transition between inner and outer can easily be made. As you go about your work, you cannot always be in meditation. There are things to be done. But if you can always be just looking, just looking, nothing more, then you will understand, because in that looking, your vision becomes wider and wider. If I look at person, then I have limited my seeing. But if I simply look without thought, then everything expands. Endlessly expands. And nothing to be thought about. Nothing to be said. Just seeing. Because I repeat, it is the seer that you are seeking. And you are always seeing. You always see. Always. How can I tell you? How can I teach you to do something that you are doing every moment? You sleep, you are seeing. Who sees dreams? Is there not a seer in dreams? You wake up and you say, I had a dream. And you talk about it. Well, somebody saw that. Who saw that? You wake up and you said, I have a good sleep. I slept well. Who slept well? Somebody slept well. Who is it that slept well? That is all it is about. You may make it as complicated as you wish. You can write as many tomes as you want. But when it comes down to it, there's only seeing. Seeing within and seeing without. And you simply sit in the middle of the clear pool of seeing. And just look. And that's all you do. I would ask that everyone try this for one reason. The instant that you begin it, peace descends. If you're doing it correctly, peace enters. Somehow, quietly. If you're really just seeing, not thinking, just seeing, a peace begins to move. And you see, I'm tricking you, because I want you to become addicted to that peace more than you are addicted to the activity and movement of ego. You see, I'm just a trickster when it's all said and done. Because I know well what you're seeking. And that peace that starts to move by just seeing, the choiceless choice, all of those things, just that, the peace begins. And the peace becomes very addictive. And it is through that addiction that I hope to push you off into the abyss. Just as you have followed all the other addictions of your life, now follow this addiction of peace. simple. When you see something, just look at all. Just the very seeing. Everyone sees, so why not? Doesn't take any special techniques. Don't have to ring any bells. You don't have to do anything. You just look. And all is made clear. Because you are not seeking anything else except the seeker. Very simple. Yes. So, are there any other questions? Yes. It's very nice to see you, my friend.
Bartholomew, it occurred to me in a conversation, I don't know where the thought came from, that there must be an infinite number of levels above and their unconsciousness, if you will. And there must be an infinite number below. I mean, the conceptualizing mind puts numbers on things, but in the realm of all, at least the way I see it, there can be no limit to the numbers or the levels, so-called levels, that we think that there are. And if that's the case, then in terms of what infinity implies, then it just makes absolutely no difference where we're at. On that so-called scale, because all is infinity, no matter where you are. Relative to some other point, you are definitely always at infinity.
I understand that. And if you really know that you are part of the infinite, then it doesn't matter where you stand, what level, how high, how low, how right, how left. That is a true statement, my friend. The greatest obstacle is that most people do not know that they are part of the infinite, and therefore have absolutely no conception of the choices available to them. They see only one choice, which is what their senses tell them. That is the only choice that they see, and that is the illusion that I wish to break. Do you understand me? I'm simply saying that if you know with a knowing, not an intellectualization, but a knowing of your being, that no matter where you are as close to the infinite as any other place, then I say to you, the battle is finished. You know this. But if you say to me with your intellect that this must be so, then I say, yes, it is so. Now find it out with all of your being. And then you will know. Your mind can tell you, but you must experience with your being. Because you see, if you are not in pain, then the question is irrelevant. If you find life the way you see it, utterly beautiful, wonderful, and abundant, then we have nothing to talk about. The only people I can talk to are the ones who say, things are meaningless. Things are difficult. Things are not as I know they can be. And that implies that they sense that there is some other dimension that they have not become one with, that they wish to become one with. And that is all I am here to say, that there are other dimensions to become one with that are not limited. You speak truth, my friend. Any place on the circle is the same. But to know that all is infinite, now that is something quite different. To say it is all right to be as you are is fine. I'm not trying to change anyone. I'm simply saying to those who come and say, I hurt, I ache, I yearn, then we have to come into the realm of words and say, let us move out of words into experience. Did you understand what I
mean? Yes. And I sort of have a further question in this vein. It seems to me that there seems to be an eternal striving and I see a manifestation of that in people, and I speak of people because that's my only reference, who seem to constantly want to experience the next level. They're very much perhaps interested in clairvoyance or the future or the understanding the past or what's on the other side, death. But if there is this infinite realm, then it's immaterial, because on the other side of that there'll be something.
Of course.
And on the other side, and that this striving is a simply an empty quest, because it's just like traveling in the ocean. You just go from here to there, and you become maybe identified with the striving rather than with what you are now. Period.
Precise. I see nothing in what you have said that I cannot absolutely agree with. The point is this. If someone is striving and is desperate and is seeking, I say to them, you're looking at it the wrong way. The thing that you are seeking and striving for, call it what you will, life after death, fear, whatever, the thing that you're seeking, you already are. And there is nothing to seek. And there is no journey to make. This is what I precisely began with this morning. There is nothing to do except to watch. Except to participate, if you will. Except to be a part of. Your thoughts keep you separated and sliced off from life as it floods. You are saying the truth, that every instant of life is as wondrous as every other instant of life, whether it be on this world, another world, Neptune, Pluto, life after death, how many? And I say you are absolutely right, because the webs are all interconnected, and within that web flows the same wonder. I agree with you. But I also see that in most people's minds, they are not aware that they are in this wondrous flood of life. They see the struggle. They see that they are not here. They wish to be other place. They wish to be somewhere else. And I say that that very wish to be somewhere else, to be somewhat different, to not be exactly what they are, is the problem.
Desire
is the problem. Everything comes down. Desiring God is just as much a problem as desiring whatever else it is one might desire. I am not asking for anything except observation. Because I agree with you, my friend. There is no struggle. The struggle itself is like a web that encircles a net and strangles you. There's nothing to do. There's nowhere to go. There's nothing to find. There's simply to look and participate. But if one is in mind and just following thoughts, thoughts are not who you are. Emotions are not who you are. They are there, but they are not who you are. And so all I ask is that a trial be given of being the observer of all of it. And being the observer gives you the floodgates of life opening, which is all you're saying. It's wherever you are is as wondrous as there is as much wonder at this moment as there will ever be in eternal understanding, and I agree with you. But only if you know that. Now, if you know that, then you are free. Because you are now free to go anywhere, to travel to any realm, because you carry with you the knowingness of the oneness. But until you know that, you will simply have to go from layer to level, to life, to birth, to death, on, continuing, because you think there is somewhere to go, something to seek. It is no different to seek a woman than it is to seek God. I see no difference. The seeker is still present. It doesn't matter what they're seeking. And this is where people become very angry with me, because they feel it is better to seek God than to seek sexual satisfaction. And I say, I see no difference. Just pay attention to who's seeking. Every expression of the One is equally filled with the One. But it's equally closed to you if you don't know it. That's really all I say. And I agree with you. Past is thought. Future is thought. Afterlife is thought. Maybe there is no afterlife. How does anybody know there's an afterlife? How? It's all thought. The gods, maybe they're all thoughts. The masters, maybe they're just thoughts. What difference does it make? They are all thoughts. There's only one thing that matters. There's only one thing you know. We go back to where we began. There's only one thing you can state with any real justification, that you were there. That's all you know. And that's all you need. That's all you ever need. Are there any questions?
We had a topic from the last meeting that you wanted us to raise again, which is the difference between being natural and being animalistic.
Well, I found that many people would come to me in confusion over these two terms, and they would hear me say so often on my tapes, that which is the most natural is that which is closest to the vastness within. And they became upset because when they say natural, they think animal. To them, that which is animalistic is that which is most natural. And I will say this, that animals are natural. But all naturalness does not have to manifest as animal. You understand? A tree is perfectly natural. The land is perfectly natural. Everything that is in its own wondrous thing is natural, and it is not animalistic. And I simply felt it important to bring it up because I find over and over again people fighting this concept of being natural because they say, well, if I'm natural, they have this idea that they're going to fall into this great abyss of animal nature and that they're going to growl and scream and fight and kill, and they become very afraid of their own natural being. Their own spontaneous natural being, because they have equated it with the body form, because you understand that you belong to the animal kingdom as far as the body is concerned. And therefore, because you've made this misidentification, you become afraid. You think, well, if I become natural, the natural thing is to become animalistic, and that brings up to mind all kinds of horrors out of the world of animal, of the rending of flesh and the destroying and the destruction and the, you know, so forth, all this. So I simply feel it important to keep deeply aware that there is a wondrous naturalness of a spontaneous being that you share with all of createdness, that there is nothing different from your wondrous natural spontaneity than from that of other createdness. And it simply goes wondrously on its way. And I think this is one of the things that you will begin to get in touch with if you simply see instead of think. You see, man is the thinker. You understand, that is your wonderful, wonderful speciality. You think. And in that thinking, you have separated yourself off. There's nothing wrong with thinking, as long as you understand what thinking is, and what it can do, and what it cannot do. Then it is a tool, useful. But if you fall into thinking and see it as the only avenue of expression, then you have misused your tool. And it is the wonderful naturalness that just comes out of you as you observe, as you become the seer. You become so wondrously aware of the naturalness of all things. Things will then flow. You know, everyone uses this word. This is something else I observed on our journey. many people use this word, you have to be in the flow, and everybody has a very different idea of what in the flow means. And the fact is that you cannot talk about the flow, you can only experience it, you can only participate in it. And what I think they really mean by being in the flow, and certainly what I mean by that, is to be in that part of your being that we will call the seer, the observer. And as you are in that stance, you will observe that all things move in their own wondrous harmony. Things come and they go and they flow and they move and they change. And everything is endlessly as it always is, always changing. And you, as the observer of all of that, feel the wonder of that participating flow. And that is what I mean by the naturalness of things. Many people identify naturalness with allowing your negative side to appear. If you're being natural, you're being negative. Well, my natural self is aggressive, rude, hostile, animalistic, and that is what people say as being natural. And I would like to point out, I feel this is a great misidentification. But that is not what I observe at all. And those that are the most natural are, if you would like the word better, the most spontaneous, which means that they have come to that place within themselves where they deeply know that one action or another matters not, whether you do yes or whether you do no, whether you do right or whether you do left, that there is a naturalness that will flow you to do yes, a naturalness that will flow you to do no, and it isn't something that your mind will make up, and it is a participation with the all and the movement of everything. There is a movement that unites all of it. But as long as you identify with the separated entities and your separated thought and your separated mind, you cannot really participate in flow. Yes, that is precisely what I meant before, that what is there in the beginning is there in the end, because it is always there. What is in the hells and what is there in the vast vaults of heaven is all the same. There's only that movement, that wondrous movement. And you see, when I say that you will begin to taste of it, when that peace begins to descend upon you, you will find that it's not a deadening peace. You know, people misidentify peace. They think that if you're going into a peaceful situation, that suddenly all of the joy of the stimulation of life is going to be dead, cut off, finished. Because you have had the only kind of joy and emotional feedback that you've had has come from your emotions and from the titillation of your thoughts. And so that is how you have learned to experience joy or expansion or interest or delight or whatever it is you would like to call it. So when this misidentification continues to go on, those are the only options that you see. And I'm only here to say there's another option. And it is the option of the watcher, of seeing without thought. This is why I keep saying, please be alert to space. Please be alert to space. Because if you are very alert to space, it itself draws you into its own spacious opening. It takes you past the limited and into the spacious. And it participates of that and tastes of that. And feels of that. And that's what I'm talking about. No book, no religion, no teacher, no one can do this for you. They can only reflect. What is a teacher? What is a real teacher? Only one thing. It holds up the mirror of the possibility and then says, are you interested? That's all. And a true teacher has experienced this, not intellectually, but totally. That is the true teacher. And that's all they do. They just hold the mirror up and say, does it look like something you're interested in? This is how you can tell the difference between a true teacher and a false teacher. A false teacher is one that has beliefs, that has limits, that doesn't hold up the mirror of the infinite constantly, A true teacher says, you can never be limited. And find it out by being the watcher. Changing nothing. No tricks. No manipulations. Just watch. No words. No thoughts. Just watch. You can speak. Certainly speak. How else are you going to communicate? Speak. Read. Think. But at the same time, be the watcher of that. I'm not asking you to stop thinking. I would lose you all in an instant. If I said to you, stop thinking, I'd lose you. Instantly. Because you've learned to love to think. And that's wonderful. But watch who's thinking. Watch the whole process. Participate totally in the total process. You see, when you are just thinking, you're only participating in a small part of that process. I'm asking you to participate in the total process, which is not only the thinking and the thought, but the thinker as well, the totality of it. And the boundless, wondrous joy of then, of moving into thought, then changes entirely. Do you understand? Instead of just identifying little thoughts, if you are all of a sudden participating in the wholeness of being the thought, as well as the thinker, as well as all of the abounding at the same time, then the joy of really being able to participate fully in thinking comes alive. I'm not asking you to stop thinking. I'm not asking you to stop feeling. I'm just saying be total about it. Be total about it. And you can only be total when you're watching the wondrous process. When you are there, participating, watching, observing, seeing, fulfilling, expanding it. They say that man lives in what, 10% of his capacities or whatever, whatever. My friends, 10%? I say it's a great deal more than 10%. There's so much more than the 90% that you're talking about. We're talking about the difference between the finite and the infinite. That's the kind of difference. And when one thinks from the infinite source, then the wholeness of thought and what it is and the wonder of it opens. And you see thought from a wholly different perspective. You participate in it in a wholly different way. An emotion comes. An emotion is there, but it's not just emotion and you battling for some kind of understanding. What happens is emotion is there. And this wondrous wholeness is also there. And so then emotion is just a wonderful experience. Whatever the emotion, call it as you will. It is a wonderful participation. I keep saying you're dead because you're not participating. Someone who thinks only thoughts instead of wholeness is cheating themselves out of the wonder of the whole process. Because going on right within you is the wonder of the totality of the process. I'm not asking for zombies that never think, that never have emotions, that march through life like some kind of automaton. What is that? But that is the translation that so many people make. I'm asking for total participation with all of the power of your being, all of it totally participating. Then you see something totally different. When you identify with animal, you're identifying with the body and all of the residue that goes with the body. When you identify with the mind, you're going with those thoughts that come and go, flickering on and off. Ever-changing. And you identify your importance with how many thoughts you can gather. And if you identify with the body, then that becomes very important, that it be beautiful, that it be healthy, that it be this, that it be that. You see, with each of these fragments of your being, you can become totally involved in that to such an extent that the wholeness is gone. I'm not against good health. I'm not against clear thinking. But I am against not being whole in the process of doing these things. Are there any other questions?
I have one. It's rather personal, but I don't mind mentioning it. I'm having a great problem at work. Last night was just really awful. And I manage some days really fine, but last night I got completely unglued. I got completely fragmented. I was just absolutely apart by the time I came.
All right, for the clarification of those who are hearing this tape, this is a woman who is a nurse. You were working in the emergency room?
No, I was working on the floor.
On the floor, all right. In a hospital. And I imagine the question is how to deal with this fragmentation. Well, my dearest friend, the answer is going to be what you already know, which is this. That if you could take seriously the first part of what we talked about today, and if you begin to practice it now, this instant, and never more relinquish your practicing of that, then there will come a day when a night like last night dawns, and you will come home in the dark of the morning and you will say, my goodness, I wasn't fragmented. And it will have become a natural, spontaneous outcome of what you have begun this instant. Do you understand? You see, if there was a button I could give you to push, I would have done it long ago, my friend. Be very sure of that. Be very sure of that. I would have done it for you. And countless, countless teachers that you've sat before would have given it to you lifetimes ago. Believe that. So what remains is seeing. Only seeing. Seeing yourself fragmented. Seeing all of the discord. Seeing all of the heartache. All of the death. All of the dying. All of the pain. Seeing. 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 And if you could begin to practice it out in your beautiful created garden, if you could begin practicing it when the times are calm, then there will come the time when that is so much a part of you that it will overlap without your conscious knowledge, and it will have happened, and you will return and not even been aware that you have been able to do it. When it is so spontaneous a part of you, then it can take its place in moments on the wards of hospitals. You see, but it's got to begin out here. It's got to begin. You cannot, unless you consider yourself some kind of a great giant, and if you do, fine. But I don't think that, I mean, I'm not speaking to you because I know that you do not claim this kind of arrogance. But if anyone listening thinks that they can take it on, fine. Then I suggest you take it on at the most moments of extremity. But those of you who admit of some human frailty and human fragmentation, I ask you to consider doing it at its quiet time. At the time when things are most peaceful with you, and begin to extend it out from that moment onward and outward and more vast and more vast. And this is why we go back to something that you know I keep hammering on, which is the simple life. I do not ask for the simple life just because of some kind of strange idea. It is simply that a simple life provides you with more moments for practicing whatever it is you're letting go than it does a complicated life. And the more complicated your life, the more difficult it is to really participate. Do you understand? It isn't because I'm against action. My friends, when you become totally grounded as the seer, you can go into the sea of politics, if you will, and you will be safe. I consider that very treacherous water indeed. Do you understand my meaning? It must begin now, in this instant, when we share this moment. And then it must extend. And you must just be the seer. Constantly the seer. Constantly the seer. With no thought. And then you say to me, how can I deal with my patients? Now, my meaning your, not your patients in your inner self, but the patients of the hospital. The answer is there is a power within that watching that can be counted on to know how to move to the right or to the left, to the yes or to the no. It is the power within that kind of awareness that can be counted on, far more than the finite mind that tries to figure things out. The seeing is all, because in the seeing is the power of the wholeness, and the wholeness knows what has to be done and what can be done at maximum. The wholeness knows. The fragmentation can only see limitation and only make selected choices, but the wholeness knows the whole thing and can then say yes, this, and then that, and yet again that, and knows spontaneously what is going on. That is the only answer that I can give you, my friend. And good luck. And one more thing. Never forget that however lonely it is, the power is always there. Mr. Moore said this morning that one of the most beautiful statements of Ramakrishna was, the winds of grace are always blowing if you would just put up your sail. And that is a promise. And the winds of grace blow where you work, because they are a part of you, and you cannot be separated. So I think that's all for today. I thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bartholomew.